Calling to order. Good morning. We are calling to order the Marin County Transit District Board of Directors. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Yes, I will now call roll. President Sackett?
Present.
Vice President Casissa?
Here.
Second Vice President Bushy? Director Here. Colbert?
Here.
Director Moulton Peters? Here. Director Rodoni?
Here.
Director Lucan?
Here.
Director Yorans Gulati?
Here.
Thank you. We have a quorum.
Thank you. And do you give instructions? Go ahead.
I will now provide instructions on how the public can participate in today's meeting. At today's meeting, in-person comments will be heard before virtual comments. If you're joining us on Zoom and you would like to comment, please use the raise hand icon located on your screen. If you're participating by phone call, please press *9 to raise your hand. When it is your turn to speak, your name will be called and you'll be prompted to unmute your device. You'll then have 2 minutes to speak. This concludes the instructions. I will also note today we received written comments on agenda item 1 from a member of the public via the district's online public comment form. The comments have been shared with the board and will be included in the public record of this meeting. This concludes my announcements. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. We'll now open it up for public expression, and this is speakers are limited to 2 minutes on items not on the district's agenda. I'm not seeing anyone in the chambers. Kate, do you see any hands raised on Zoom?
No hands online.
Okay, thank you. We will close public expression and move on to board of directors matters. Do any directors wish to make any announcements? I'm not seeing any. We'll close agenda item 2 and move on to agenda item 3, the general manager's report.
Well, good morning, President Sackett, members of the board. Happy Monday. It's good to be back in the chambers this morning. Let's see if I can figure out my technology. Here we go. So, general manager's report, starting with an update on our zero emission bus facility project at 1075 East Francisco. We received some good news about a week and a half ago from FTA that our project had cleared NEPA, the national environmental process here. So, as your board approved our CEQA documentation in January, NEPA now concludes our environmental clearance and allows us to move on to some of the other key milestones in the project. So very exciting news. We are also currently negotiating with our design consultants on final scope and budget, and we do plan to bring that contract award back to your board in the coming months, hopefully as soon as June. So good updates on that project. We are keeping our website updated, so you can go to marintransit.gov/facility for more information on our 1075 project. Also, within the last couple of weeks, we took possession of our first two electric paratransit vans. These are 2025 Ford or E-Transit, Ford E-Transit vans. They are very similar to the paratransit vans that we purchased last year, as well as the vans that we operated for the Connect service. So very excited about these. They'll go into service. We expect a range between about 125 and 150 miles, and they do hold 6 passengers and a single wheelchair. So congratulations to the team. Took a lot of effort to get these here. Last Thursday, we had a very successful event in downtown San Rafael in partnership with the What About Age group. Council Member Kurtz from San Rafael. We had over 100 people RSVP and attend this event, and it was an opportunity for not only Marin Transit, but all of our community mobility partners to educate on resources available for older adults and those with disabilities here in Marin County. So in addition to Marin Transit, we had presentations and tabling events by SMART, Golden Gate Transit, Vivalon. We had our private providers, Uber Transit, Onward, and others there to not only answer questions about the services, but also get interested parties eligible and approved for the services. We had a table for Clipper signups so we could get senior cards issued on the spot. And then we also had an opportunity to sign up for two mobility workshops that we're going to be offering later this month. And this is a travel training opportunity where participants can go out and either ride the bus or the train. We'll have two different events and just go through the full process of trip planning, fare payment, and using the service. So this was a very successful event, and we are very excited to see the turnout last week. An update on our Fare Free promotions. So in April, we celebrated Earth Day with Fare Free. Over 10,000 of our passengers took advantage of that free day of service. And I wanted to remind you all that our two big Fare Free events are coming up this summer. We will go Fare Free for 3 months for all youth in June, July, and August. And then we will also go Fare Free for the 5 days around the Marin County Fair to help support mobility to and from the fairgrounds, and that'll be July 1st through July 5th. Our website also has more information on all of our Fare Free promotions. And turning to ridership, we are presenting February 2026 ridership in the monthly monitoring. I should also mention that the quarterly report for Q2 is also included, which provides more details and highlights some of the trends that we're seeing. But in February 2026, overall ridership, system-wide ridership was 1% higher than last February. That 1% was also true for our fixed route services. We were just above 240,000 trips. On our demand response services, again, these are services that are still quite a bit below pre-pandemic levels, but we saw actually a 10% drop this February compared to last February. And with that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. I'll look to my colleagues for questions. Director Lorenz Gulati.
Thank you.
It's Monday.
Thank you so much for the report. This is, I love to see all the community engagement. For the workshop that you have on mobility, is that also for paratransit, like people with disabilities?
Yeah, so Marin Transit, we had a table and we gave a presentation. So we talked about our paratransit program and all of our Marin Access mobility services. And again, we had the opportunity to actually start the application process at the event.
No, that's great. But you mentioned that you're going to have two workshops where people can try, you know, buses and also the smart train. I'm just curious to see if people with disabilities could also be part of that, or would that be different?
They can definitely participate in those workshops, but they will be focused on the public transit options. The paratransit services actually require an application process. So unfortunately, we don't offer that as part of the travel training until you're through the actual application process.
Oh, okay, but they do get the training after they are approved by the application.
Yeah.
Oh, that's absolutely great. Thank you.
Director Moulton-Peters.
Yeah, I just wanted to add my thanks. I ran into Council Member Kurtz at two events over the weekend, and she was telling me about your event that she attended and how useful it was to have the ability for people to sign up for services right on the spot. And the fact that so many are not tech savvy or online, and so having your people and staff and others there to help them get signed up was really huge. So thank you to everyone.
Not seen any other board questions. If you could share with us the dates of when those trainings are going to happen, and you know, I think it'd be helpful if any of us could join, we can be there.
I believe it's May 21st, but I can get back to you on those.
Great. Thank you. We'll now open it up for public comment on the general manager's report. Not seeing anyone in the chambers.
No hands online.
Okay, thank you. We will close agenda item 3 and move on to agenda item 4, the consent calendar. Are there any directors who wish to pull anything from the consent calendar? Not seeing any. Is there any public comment on the consent calendar? Not seeing anyone in person.
No hands online.
Okay, we'll close public comment, and I'll ask for any deliberations or a motion on the consent calendar.
I'll make a motion to
second.
Move the. Yeah.
We have a motion by Lorenz Gulati and second by Lucan. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Consent calendar is approved. Moving on to agenda item 5, the Marin County Transit District draft operating and capital budget for FY 2026-27.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and start off this item, but item number 5 is our draft operating and capital budget for FY 2026-27. This will be a joint presentation by myself and our acting director of finance, Grizel Martinez. Grizel is going to do most of the talking this morning, but I'm going to go ahead and kick it off and just kind of bookend the presentation with a little bit of a high level summary in the beginning. And then I'm going to come back at the end and really talk about what's next. So a couple themes that you know, I'll just highlight that you can pay attention to as part of this presentation. The first point is that the district is definitely at an inflection point in terms of our finances. And you'll see in the budget that this is the first budget where we are spending operating and capital reserves to balance our budget. We're gonna do a fairly detailed presentation to walk you through the conditions that put us in this position, but also talk you through some of the ideas we have moving forward. We're gonna talk this morning a lot about carry forward funding, and this is an important concept to really better understand kind of how we got to this place today. What I would say, done an exaggerated presentation on carry forward funding, but these are funds primarily Measure AA and state funds that are very important to us that we've held in reserves for a number of years now because of windfalls and federal dollars, and we're now at a point where we're exhausting those carry forward funds. So that's an important concept as we talk moving forward. I do want to say that you know, we are in a somewhat fortunate position, even with these financial challenges, especially compared to many of our peers here in the Bay Area. You'll see that last year we did contribute over $5 million to our reserves, and we still have a fully funded emergency reserve and a nearly fully funded contingency reserve that accounts for nearly $27 million. We also have capital reserves that exceed $25 million. So we have done a good job preparing ourselves for this point and giving us time to make future decisions. And before we jump into the presentation, I also want to note that, again, compared to our peers, we're one of the few bus agencies that are currently running service levels at pre-COVID levels. So while many of our peers are in similar financial positions of seeing that fiscal cliff, we are one of the only ones that are still at that high service level. And I think that's important for us to understand, and something actually we should be quite proud of right now, is that we have been able to maintain our services. And you'll see in this budget, we continue to maintain those same levels of fixed route service, at least for the next fiscal year. Okay, here's mine. Let me go ahead and jump in. Again, I'm gonna start with a quick overview of the budget and then turn it over to Grizel to talk through each of our revenue and expense budgets, our program level budgets, and our capital budget. And then I'm gonna come back at the end and talk a little bit about our 10-year forecast and the short range transit plan. So a quick overview of our budgeting process. At Marin Transit, our budgeting is a very collaborative process. We start off with a kickoff meeting, and all staff are involved in that kickoff meeting, and we have a fairly high level discussion about the goals of the budget, and then who's going to be included in some of the more detailed discussions. We then spend about 3 months going through the program level budgets in detail. This is a very refined process where we talk about, we look at trends over the last year, we talk about future assumptions, and we really get into kind of the line item information to really help the finance team develop the budget. Today is a presentation of the draft budget. We're looking for your guidance and feedback as we present our information. And then we'll come back in June and ask for final adoption. The goals of the budget are to really put us in a financial position to be able to carry forward our service for the public, but also look at maintaining our adopted reserve levels and also looking at our 5-year and 10-year financial picture to make sure we're doing the right planning needed for our future service. So a quick overview before I turn it over to Grizel. As I mentioned earlier, we are at this financial inflection point. Again, the first time that we are showing you a budget where we are dipping into both our operating and our capital reserves. The operating reserves are a little over $500,000 and the capital reserves are a little over $2 million. Operating costs are outpacing revenues. I should note that this isn't the first year that we've seen that, but this is the first year that our carry forward funds are starting to get depleted and really going down to almost zero in a couple of our carry forward categories that Grizel will talk more about. This year's budget, 8% of this year's budget is carry forward funding. Last year, 17% of the budget was carry forward funding. So that gives you a sense there's about a $5 million difference between what we're applying this year versus last year. And a big focus of this budget is continued investment in our capital facilities that allow us to achieve financial stability in future years and also allow us to meet our zero emission goals that are very important to our agency. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Grizel to get into the details of the budget.
Good morning, President Sackett and members of the board. We'll begin with a summary of our fiscal year 27 budget. This table includes actuals for fiscal year 25 and estimated actuals for this current year, fiscal year 26, and also the presentation of the-
Grizel, can you just pull the mic a little closer to yourself?
Thank you, yes. And also the presentation of the fiscal year 27 budget, which runs from July 1st, 2026 to June 30th, 2027. The fiscal year 27 budget shows total revenues for operations and capital at $63.9 million and total expenditures for operations and capital at $66.6 million, with expenditures exceeding revenues by $2.7 million. This is the first budget where we are utilizing reserves from our fund balance to balance our operations and capital budgets. We will transfer an estimated $575,000 to fund operations and an estimated $2.1 million in reserves to fund our capital projects. This leaves us with a total fund balance of $47 million. The district does strive to maintain a reserve balance equivalent to a minimum of 2 months and up to 6 months of operating expenses based on the adopted budget. This budget allows for a fully funded emergency reserve, which is our minimum of 2 months of operating costs. And it also allows for a contingency reserve of 3.5 months of additional funding. And this is 3.5 months of operating costs. Additionally, the capital reserve is at $24.3 million. If we look at the second column from the right for our fiscal year 26 estimated actuals, we do see that revenues of $61 million exceed our expenditures of $56 million, which will add an estimated $5.4 million to our fund balance in the current year. We will discuss the impacts of carry forward revenues in more detail in the next few slides. So now we'll look at our operations revenues. Measure AA sales tax continues to be our largest single source of revenue and makes up 39% of our total operations revenues. This means that the projections for growth in this revenue category are extremely significant to our agency. TAM administers our Measure AA funding and is predicting positive sales tax revenue growth of 1.5% above our current year for fiscal year 27. Their longer term forecast is also optimistic and predicts 2 years at 1.5% growth and then 2% growth for the following 5 years. State revenue is our second largest source, with Transit Development Act, or TDA, funds at 19% of total operations revenues, and State Transit Assistance, or STA, funds at 8% of total revenues. We do expect to see a decline in state revenues in fiscal year 27, with TDA levels declining by 3% and STA declining by 8% in the fiscal year 27 budget compared to the current year. The primary drivers for the decline in state funding are a lower STA funding allocation to MTC, the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, for our area, for the Bay Area. This is estimated to be down by $30 million in fiscal year 27. And TDA funding specifically for Marin County is expected to decline by $17 million in fiscal year 27. And the TDA funding specifically is derived from a quarter cent state sales tax and tax on diesel fuels. And as we see more drivers transitioning to electric and also fuel efficiency continuing to improve, we see this decline in that diesel fuel tax. Okay, so we'll move on here to our next slide, which represents the district's revenue funding sources. It's represented by the color-coded bars and the expense level represented by the bold red line. This is by fiscal year, and it shows the last 10 years. This chart allows you to see historical trends in our use of revenue funding sources. Notably, federal funding, which is represented in orange, was higher than usual during fiscal year 20 to fiscal year 23. And this was due to one-time COVID assistance that was issued to transit agencies. This allowed us to keep unspent Measure AA funding with TAM, held at TAM. And this is what we will refer to as carry forward for Measure A. And this also allowed us to contribute property tax revenues to our fund balance during these years. Starting in fiscal year 24, we begin to use more Measure AA revenues. This is represented in the dark green colors in the bar, as our COVID era federal funding came to an end. This also meant that we began using Measure AA carry forward reserves that had accumulated during those COVID years. The district has been more reliant on these Measure AA funds from fiscal year 24 and onward, and accumulated Measure AA carry forward reserves have been spent down and continue to decline. This chart also shows that expenses have continued to increase steadily since fiscal year 21. And for the first time in this budget, which is the bar farthest to the right for fiscal year 27, we see higher expenditures than revenues. Now I'm going to, going back to our last chart, I'm just gonna focus in on the dark green, which is the Measure AA revenue. And I'm gonna talk through how we have been spending this in the past few years. In this next slide. So this is Measure AA is our most significant source of revenue. And this graph shows you the expenditure of Measure AA revenue for the past 10 years by category. The categories are color coded by the five Measure AA categories that are broken out. So we have local transit in dark green, school in orange, rural in that mustard color, special needs in that light green color, and then capital in gray. And again, you can see a similar trend that I just explained in the last slide between the COVID years, basically fiscal year 21 to fiscal year 23, you see a dip in our use of Measure AA revenue funding, again, due to the higher reliance on that one-time federal relief funding. The bar furthest to the right is our fiscal year 27 Measure AA allocation request of $20.6 million. Of this amount, $3 million is carry forward funds that are available from this prior year, current year, fiscal year 26. This is a significant decline from the carry forward that we used in our current fiscal year 26 of 8.2 million for our allocation request. So with this, we still have a remaining balance held by TAM of 3.3 million of unspent funds, but they are specific to only the schools and special needs categories, and these can be used in future years. And this next slide, we dive a bit deeper into our actual Measure AA carry forward reserve levels. We are showing a similar color coding as in the prior slide for the Measure AA categories. The chart shows a 7-year history and it includes fiscal year 27 budget and a look ahead into fiscal year 28. The most notable trend here is that Measure AA carry forward levels have been declining since fiscal year 24. Specifically, that local transit category in dark green has seen the most carry forward expenditure, with the remaining 2.6 in carry forward in that category to be requested in our fiscal year 27 allocation request for the local budget. This is the bar that's second from the right. All carry forward amounts are expected to be depleted after fiscal year 27, with the exception of schools and special needs categories, which are shown at that very last bar in orange and in light green. This is a chart we typically don't show, but we thought it was important to stress the impact of carry forward funding over the past few years and how going forward, we do not have the luxury of having this funding available to us. So now we're going to shift over to expenses. This is a donut chart for our expenses, which are estimated to be 49.6 million in this budget. Purchase transportation is our largest expenditure and makes up 78% of our operating expenses. It's comprised of that dark green segment for fixed route purchase transportation. The mustard segment is for local paratransit and mobility programs. And then that brighter teal blue color represents regional paratransit purchase transportation. Operations expenses are expected to increase in this budget, with the primary drivers coming from increases in purchase transportation costs, and also we continue to see increases in fuel costs as well. The district also sees an increase in salaries and benefits in this budget, and I will talk through this in a little more detail in the next few slides, where I will present each of the operations program budgets. So these are administration, local, yellow bus, rural, and marine access. And before we move on to those program level budgets, we do want to show a chart of our overall fixed route service levels. And this illustrates that we have maintained the same level of fixed route service. And this fiscal year 27 budget continues to maintain these levels. As Robert mentioned earlier, we are fortunate in that we have never reduced service coming out of COVID. And with that, we will look into our operations program budgets, and we begin with the administration budget, which is 5.9 million. This includes the revenues from property tax and also the expenditures of our direct staff and our office expenses. Our current budgeted staffing levels are 22.5 full-time equivalents, or FTEs, and approval of this budget will increase our FTEs by 0.5 to 23 FTEs. This is for a director of special projects to assist the district with the operations and maintenance facility development and other high priority projects. Our budget does assume a vacancy rate of 5%, and this assumption remains unchanged from our current year budget. Our next program budget is the local service budget, which is 36.1 million. and makes up 73% of operation costs. It is by far our largest program budget. It includes services operated by Golden Gate Transit, Marin Airporter, and also Bowers Transportation for the Muir Woods Shuttle. And it also does include an 8% increase in purchase transportation costs. Specifically, we are facing a 9% increase in the Golden Gate contract rate and a 5.7% increase in our Marin Airporter contract rate for fiscal year 27. Our next program budget is the Yellow Bus Service budget at $1.8 million. And this includes the operation of the Ross Valley Yellow Bus Program, which is operated by Bauer. It also includes the distribution of $1.1 million in Measure AA funds, which we distribute to 5 Yellow Bus programs in the county. And this does include the Ross Valley Yellow Bus Program as well. Our next program budget is the rural budget at $3.3 million. And it includes operation of 2 routes out to West Marin, which is operated by Marin Airporter. There are no significant changes to service levels for the rural budget, but there is a 6% increase in expenses due to increased purchase transportation costs. And the final operations budget area is the Marin Access Program. And this includes the ADA mandated local paratransit service. It also includes the regional paratransit service that's funded by Golden Gate Transit and our complementary mobility options and programs, which include the mobility wallet and the volunteer drivers programs. The primary funding revenue for this program are Measure AA, Measure B, and federal funding from both Section 5307 and 5310 programs. This next slide shows the Marin Access service hours that are operated under Marin Access for the past 10 years. This is a demand-based service, so we are budgeting for a slight increase in demand for fiscal year 27. Compared to our current year actuals of fiscal year 26. Unlike our fixed route services, Marin Access services still have not recovered to the same level of service that we saw pre-COVID. And although we are forecasting a slight increase, we continue to see little to no growth in this category since the pandemic. And then with that, we will move on to our final area, which is the capital budget. We do have a $17 million budget for the next year. The chart on the right shows our capital expenditures over the last 10 years, where each bar represents the total capital expenditure for that year, and it's broken into color-coded categories for each capital expense grouping. So blue for facilities, dark green for vehicles, lighter green for bus stop improvements, et cetera. And as you can see, this chart does show large fluctuations year to year. And this depends on whether we had vehicles delivered and purchased in a certain year, or if we had a large facility project in a certain year, and so on. For fiscal year 27 specifically, we do see vehicle purchases represent our most significant capital investment, and this includes the purchase of 5 40-foot hybrid electric buses and 22 paratransit vehicle replacements. Facilities represent our second most significant capital investment in fiscal year 27, and we are currently in the construction phase for 3010-3020 Kerner, the parking and charging facility there. And we will also be working through the design phase and surcharge construction work of the 1075 East Francisco facility. We will also be in the design phase for building improvements at both 3000 Kerner Paratransit Maintenance Building in San Rafael, as well as the 600 Rush Landing Office Building and parking lot rehab in Novato. The capital budget also includes ongoing vehicle preventative maintenance projects, which includes a hybrid battery midlife refresh for 11 vehicles. And as I stated earlier, the capital budget for fiscal year 27 will require the expenditure of $2.1 million in capital reserves for planned local match to support the development of our capital projects. And with that, I am going to pass it back to Robert.
Okay, thank you, Grizel. So our budget is a one-year snapshot at our financial picture, but obviously we are continuing to look ahead about what are the impacts of this budget on our future service. Immediately after adoption of this budget, we'll take those inputs and plug them into our 10-year short-range transit plan. That's really where we start to map out the future, where we look at the financial cliff and start to make some decisions around what actions can we take as a board to curb some of the bleeding financially here. We will start to get some other updated inputs that are very helpful for us, so we'll get updated financial pictures. We also have two of our largest service contracts will be either renegotiated or rebid this year. So that includes the Golden Gate Transit contract as well as our demand response paratransit contract that we are planning to release an RFP for later this summer. That 10-year short-range transit plan, we started late last year. As you recall, we had a workshop with your board in November to help give us some guidance on some of our financial assumptions. That plan does need to be fiscally constrained, and we will need to start to look at some service adjustments, whether those be service cuts or service reallocations, as well as potentially some fare changes as part of that plan. The final slide I have in this morning's presentation is to just let you all know that we do have a timeline for these changes. So if we do need to go down the path of making those service adjustments or those changes to our fares, we have a process laid out based on where we're starting to see that fiscal cliff really impact our reserve levels. So based on the inputs we have right now, and again, we'll come back as part of the short-range transit plan with more details on this, if we need to go down the path of making service adjustments, we'll come back in about a year as part of probably next year's budget and start to introduce the magnitude of those cuts and then go through a process with your board and the public where we identify where we need to focus those changes and potential cuts, and then go through the public hearing process before we implement likely another year later. Right now, as we start to look at future fare proposal changes, those have a far less significant impact on our financials, and we would probably push those out into a future year, so probably more like a 2029-2030 implementation. But we did want to include this chart just to show our board that we have mapped this out if we need to start to take some of these corrective actions in the coming years. So with that, we will be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you very much, Grizel. Great presentation. Really appreciate that. Any questions from Director Supervisor or Director Moulton Peters?
I was pointing to Director Colbert.
Oh, and I'll sorry. To... Okay, Director Colbert.
Thanks. Hey, Robert. Thanks so much for the report. I have a question for you because we sort of seem to be trying to figure out, you know, what we're going to do with the money, which is obviously paramount, but part of it also is like, are we being as efficient as we can be? So I'd welcome your thoughts or from your team of, what if we were to employ some kind of shared ride service on some of our corridors, say perhaps along Sir Francis Drake, would that allow you to move some of our more higher capacity vehicles and arrange them for sort of possibly more efficient use to our system?
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. As you know, we have different typologies of service, some that are focused on what we consider high capacity types of fixed route service, where we really try and get high frequency, target high ridership markets, whether those are in some of our, you know, higher ridership areas around schools, within the canal and central business districts. We also have our rural program that serves, you know, a more dispersed geography. We also have what we call the shuttles program, and the shuttles historically have served, you know, our more suburban areas in Marin County, and they tend to have lower ridership. So I do think there is an opportunity, again, if we're able to partner with the private sector in a way that allows us to continue to support goals around, you know, greenhouse gas reductions and congestion relief. If there's opportunities for that market to better serve our riders and obviously being mindful of fair policy and other types of equity concerns, it could give us an opportunity to repurpose those resources into some of our higher need areas and actually start to, you know, not only save some costs, but potentially actually improve service for those that need it. So it's definitely an interesting opportunity to look at. I think what we've seen historically with partnerships in the TNC market, unless they're truly shared rides, they don't quite achieve some of the goals that we have on you know, the fixed route side of reducing congestion, getting cars off the road and reducing VMT. But again, if that model shifts to more of a shared ride market, it could work out.
Thank you.
Director Moulton-Peters.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the report, Grizel. Really well done. Robert and Grizel, question for you about the significance of spending down our carry forward funds. And I wondered, what had we used them for in the past? And were these set aside to do what we're doing with them now, which is to, you know, subsidize costs? And I'm trying to get my head around the significance of what they've been used for and why spending them down is an issue now.
Yeah, maybe I'll start, and Grizel, you can jump in. I think in normal conditions, we don't plan to have carry forward, right? Carry forward right. Occur when projections come in higher than we expect. Carry forwards come in for these one-time sources like the federal dollars. We didn't expect COVID to happen. We didn't expect to get kind of a surge of money from the federal government, but it allowed us to not spend the local dollars we had in place. So again, I think moving forward, we aren't expecting to have future carry forwards, and really we have to live within our means in terms of making sure our expenses align with the revenues that we expect. Anything else you want to add, Grizel?
Robert summed it up well. I think in those post-COVID years where we had that luxury of having ample carry forward funding, we would typically try our best to balance our budget and used our Measure AA allocation requests accordingly to balance our program budgets. This also allowed for our property tax that we collect to then be moved to our fund balance, which has helped us to maintain a very healthy fund balance over the years. But again, now that trend is shifting and we just have to be mindful of that.
Okay. I'm certainly aware that other transit agencies are facing the same thing right now, spending through all their COVID dollars, and now they're just into regular budget funds. What impact do increasing fuel prices, what do you see in addition to our increased contractor costs? Is this going to be a significant hit? I guess we don't have a crystal ball, but I'm wondering what you're thinking.
We did budget for a 40% increase in fuel for fiscal year 27, which I just doing some, I mean, yes, it's very difficult to predict what will be happening, but I think it's probably in line with what the market is showing right now.
But you budgeted for it, and that's
yeah.
Good news.
Yes.
Thank you.
The other thing I would add, Director Moulton-Peters, we pay for fuel outside of our contract costs, so we pay for that directly, which takes that risk away from the contractors. So if we were to ask for fuel include, well, I should say the one exception is Mirwood Shuttle, that is an all-inclusive contract. But if we were to ask the contractors to pay for fuel, they would probably pad their rates and probably pad them even more moving forward because of those uncertainties.
Director Lucan.
Yeah, just two questions. The guidance that we get from TAM on the basically the sales tax increase that we're projecting for this next fiscal year. What times of year do you usually get updates from them or through TAM? And I know we'll sit on or a handful of us sit on TAM, but what are you hearing from there? Because I think the last report we got, it was a little conservative. They're thinking it's a little bit better. Costs are rising all over the place, but people seem to still be spending.
Yes, that's right. I can tell you the last forecast that we have from TAM for Measure AA revenue came through their February memorandum, which addressed our Measure AA and Measure B levels. I believe they would give their projections once a year, but they may have updates throughout the year as well that they'll communicate to us. But this one that I referenced and specifically is from this February.
From February, yeah. Okay. And mm-hmm. I imagine as we kind of get closer to final adoption, you'll be checking in again, see if there's any changes updates in their forecast. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's right.
Great. And then the other one, as we're coming up on the SRTP, I know we're just, 2-3 weeks into mascots. Do you think we'll be able to have any early data that we could, just lean on? I mean, it's so early to tell if we're seeing anything in terms of, service levels that we weren't anticipating. I know it's probably going to be too early, but just wanted to get your thoughts. Or are we seeing anything anecdotally that was either right on what we projected or kind of a surprise?
Great question. We will do our best to share what we know at that time. I think obviously changes of this magnitude, especially on the regional side, will probably take a little bit of time for riders to change any behavior. One reason we did want to keep our service levels through this fiscal year and not make changes was because of mascots. We recognized we just did a big change, and to come right back and start to do another change, and especially a service reduction, would not be good practice. So at this point, we are, as you can tell in the budget, we're able to fund the current service levels. We will be monitoring those. I think all agencies are committed, and we just had a meeting last week to kind of talk through kind of early feedback. We are committed to being nimble and being dynamic. If there are things we're seeing early on that need to be adjusted, doing so. But I think the important part is to really let those new services have some time to mature and let riders respond accordingly.
Director Lauren Sculati.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for the presentation. I have a similar question to Director Moulton-Peters around fuel. It's as is 7% of our budget. I was just curious, as we are moving into electric vehicles, how is that shifting, or when are we going to see that change, and what will be the equivalence reducing fuel costs versus utilities?
Yeah.
And if we have any batteries and electric.
Great question. And you gave me another opportunity to plug our future facility, because that facility really, not only does it give us the control to move forward with our zero emissions plan. I mean, that is our ticket to acquiring more electric vehicles and to moving to that renewable energy source. It also gives us control over fueling. And right now, we do not have a fuel tank, diesel, unleaded, on any of our property. So we are subject to others, including the county, including private fueling companies, our contractors that fuel. They negotiate those rates independent of Marin Transit. So the facility gives us control to be able to go out and negotiate those rates. It gives us control to be able to electrify our fleet. We've even found a high degree of variability between what we've been able to negotiate with PG&E at our Rush Landing-owned property in terms of charging rates, and what Golden Gate negotiates on their property for charging rates. They're completely different. So again, just having that control puts us in a much better position to be able to get those lower costs for both fuel and energy.
Thank you. And my second question is a low-hanging fruit, as we're trying to figure out how to increase revenue. You mentioned there is like a very small percentage on advertising. Is it, opportunity to grow in there, or how is that?
Yeah, great question. And you gave me another opportunity to plug our facility. So we do advertising only on our Golden Gate operated fleet, because that fleet all parks in the same lot, and the advertising contractor can come in and they know they have access to the vehicles. When we tried to put out advertising on our other fleets, the private sector came back and said, your vehicles are all over the county, and it's just not efficient for us to go to three or four different locations and do advertising. So if we had a central parking location, that would really help us negotiate and get advertising on the rest of our fleet. So right now we're only generating revenue on about a third of our revenue vehicles. So that is a future potential that we could look at.
Okay, thank you.
Director Rodoni.
Yes, thank you, Robert and Gazelle, for the presentation. Very thorough presentation, by the way. I don't want to forget, and Director Galati mentioned this, don't forget to look at the revenue side. Are there opportunities to increase the revenues? Because mm-hmm. I think sometimes we always look at cutting expenses, but I think we should take some time the next couple of years to look at how can we increase those revenues. And I don't know that anyone has the answer today, but we should brainstorm around that. What are the opportunities? Because I know TAM just went through an adjustment of their percentages. It's coming up again in six or so years. It may be a time to push for more public transit funds out of that measure coming up. And there may be other opportunities that pop up, you know, maybe in the North Bay or in the Bay Area even. So I don't want to forget the revenue side, because I'm worried that cutting service will be the most impactful. And I'm really worried about particularly the rural service, which sort of stands out as really costly service, but it's really important. So I want to keep that in mind. We shouldn't just look at how to cut expenses. We should look at how to increase revenues, including advertisement and stuff. And I know the new facility will provide a lot of opportunities, Robert. So I'll give you one more chance to talk about that.
Yeah. Well, I do want to give the board reassurance that we are out there looking for money, specifically on the capital side right now, and chasing discretionary grant programs, because every dollar we get that can help support our capital program allows us to save some of those capital reserves. So the team has been great about identifying those funding sources and putting together really good applications. And to date, we've been very successful. So we'll continue to do that. Moving forward, I think on the operating side, we need to get a little bit more creative and look for partnership opportunities to bring in potentially more fare revenue, and then talking to our funding partners about other opportunities. So thanks for mentioning that.
Two questions. One is, do we get additional funding based on increased ridership? And then the second one is, you mentioned kind of looking at fares in 2029, and I recognize that fares are a really small part of that, but you can give a little bit of a preview of why you're putting that discussion off.
Yeah, let me start. The short answer to your question about increased ridership is yes, we get more revenue. We get more revenue two places. One is fare revenue, but perhaps the more significant increase is how we split specifically some of our state dollars between the other transit partners here in the county. So when those TDA and STA dollars come into the county, we have a formula that we split with Golden Gate Transit and SMART. It's based on a number of factors, including ridership. It's one of those. So again, if everybody's ridership goes up as a percentage, we won't get any more revenue. But if our ridership goes up and the other agencies do not see similar trends, we would get a larger percent of that revenue. So it is to our advantage to continue to try and grow our ridership and that's one reason why.
And on that, does that formula change? Like, for example, the 3-month free fares this summer, does that formula change if they're free, or is it solely numbers?
It's solely numbers. So all of those free SMART riders, those seniors and youth, those are in the formula. That allocation is, I think it's 2 years in the rears. So, you know, it does take a little bit of time for us to start to see those changes. But it will eventually. in terms of looking at pushing out fares, I think, you know, we've always been committed as an agency to try and keep our fares affordable for riders. It's It's typically been the last thing we do, and we haven't changed fares, I believe, since 2001. So it's been a long time since we've adjusted our base fares on our fixed route transit service. We did increase our paratransit, fares, I believe, back in 2020. It's one of those that does generate new revenue, but not a lot. And so just trying to weigh the impacts of the added fares, going back to your point about ridership, if we start to suffer ridership declines because of increased fares, it may actually be to our advantage not to increase those fares and to retain the higher ridership. So those are all things that we take into consideration. But it is, you know, our costs have gone up. Costs of everything has gone up. So maybe it is time to start to look at some slight increases in fares.
Thank you. Not seeing any other director questions, we'll open this up for public comment on the operating and capital budget. Not seeing any public comment in the chambers. Are there any hands raised on Zoom?
No hands on Zoom.
Okay, we will close public comment and I will bring it back for any further deliberations and or a motion.
This is an information only item. That's fine.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Then there are no further deliberations. We will move on to agenda item 6. Thank you for that clarification. Agenda item 6 is the Muir Woods Shuttle Evaluation Report for the 2025 season.
And our operations analyst, Sandra Romero, will give the presentation this morning. This is our annual report on the Muir Woods Shuttle.
Good morning. My name is Sandra, operations analyst, and I'll be presenting the Muir Woods Shuttle Evaluation Report for the 2025 season. Just to get us grounded, I am going to review the agenda, going into the background of the shuttle, then into the shuttle performance, then into financial information and metrics, and then the service outlook in the future. Okay, so quick shuttle history. I'll kind of just breeze through here, but the Muir Woods Shuttle started as a partnership between the National Park Service and Marin Transit in 2009. It provides a shuttle currently through a third-party contractor, and MPS, and it is funded for the shuttle operations. We've kind of gone through different versions and iterations of the shuttle due to ridership levels, demand at Muir Woods, and obviously the COVID-19 pandemic. Historically, the shuttle has kind of operated out of different areas within Marin to arrive to Muir Woods. In 2022, we also started operating out of the Larkspur Ferry Terminal and are currently operating out of the ferry terminal. Okay, so starting the 2025 season overview, we had 89 total days of service, which was 9% fewer days of service compared to 2024. We had originally planned 97 days of service, but the season was cut due to the government shutdown that started on October 1st, 2025, which will kind of be a trend in the data and metrics that we will see throughout this presentation. The shuttle ran on weekends and holidays throughout April and September, but then we increased shuttle service to 7 days a week from mid-June to mid-August, that's our peak season during the summer. So fares, they're purchased online, and to use the Muir Woods shuttle, you have to do an advance reservation. And that started in 2023 as we kind of transitioned to a more shuttle charter service to the Woods. And fares were $375 per adult for a round trip ticket to and from the park. And youth 15 and under is free. So into the shuttle performance. So ridership, we had about 38,000 passengers in 2025, which was down 12% from the previous year. And ridership decrease, we attribute it to be due to the fewer days of service due to October not being in service as we had planned. And in this extended bar chart, this is just kind of the service throughout every month for the last 5 years. Orange is 2025, and it also has the bold numbers to give the detailed number of riders. And as you can see, during the summer, July, August, June, we have the peak of the season with the most ridership, and that's also when we operate 7 days a week. And in the fall and spring, that is when we only operate on weekends, and you can kind of see the peak and the valleys of the ridership with the Muirwood shuttle. Productivity. So we had 11.4 passengers per hour, which was a 5% increase from the previous year. And the increase in productivity is likely due to the ending of the season early, as October is traditionally our lowest ridership month. So the productivity is sort of spread out in a higher ridership period from April to September. So there was a slight bump into the productivity because of that cutting of service in October. And mirrored in passengers per trip. So we had 13 passengers per trip, which was a 5% increase from 2024. And again, due to cutting the service early in October, we saw that little increase. Mode share. So on 2025 shuttle service days, we had an average 6.6 mode share across the whole shuttle season. Up to 9% of the park visitors rode the shuttle on the busiest days, and we had 29,000 park visitors and 19,000 shuttle riders. And again, the increase due to the shorter season and higher productivity. Financial information and metrics. So for the cost-sharing agreement that we have with MPS, we signed a new agreement in 2023, and the new agreement between Marin Transit and MPS is to divide the costs evenly up until up of the shuttle costs each year until 80,000, after which NPS covers 100% of the shuttle costs until the maximum value of the cost-sharing agreement is reached. And under this new agreement, Marin Transit does not take any revenue from the fares. It all goes to MPS, and they keep that revenue. So fare-based metrics, which were in reports for previous years, are not going to be included in this year's presentation. So program costs, we had a total of $907,000, a little over that, and it is a 16% decrease from 2024. The cost per hour is $197 per revenue hours, which was a 3% increase, which is in line with the increase of our purchase transportation contract increase each year with Bauer. And the overall cost decrease is due to the fewer days of operations in the season compared to the previous year. The cost per passenger is $23.58, which is a 1% decrease from 2024. And cost per passenger remains stable despite the increasingly hour costs due to higher productivity. And this is a pie chart of just the cost share, a pretty basic pie chart, just to show the cap of the cost sharing agreement between NPS and Marin Transit. So the share of the shuttle costs were capped in 2025 at 400,000. NPS contributed a total of $507,406. So the NPS paid about a little over 50%, so 56%. And just looking towards the future, the service outlook. So we are working with MPS every year, meeting with them to monitor future federal funding levels for the program and adjusting service levels. Obviously, with the shutdown, that was a big something that affected service last year and kind of continues, when shutdowns happen. So, we always work with MPS to make sure we know when your woods will be open and providing a service concurrently. And so we are also keeping an eye on the Frank Valley Road construction impacts and Muir Woods shuttle parking lot, which will affect the operations of our shuttle. So you know, we're pretty close contact with MPS on any of those changes. And for the 2026 service year, which just started, we are now only operating Friday through Sunday service only out of Larkspur Ferry Terminal. We are not operating out of Sausalito anymore during this year, starting this year. And something that we're sort of looking towards the future in observations is just seeing how now operating fully out of Larkspur to see how the smart train and ferry mode share to reach the shuttle kind of impacts the user experience and seeing those metrics. And that is my presentation. Thank you so much. If anyone has any questions.
Thank you, Sandra. Director Lauren Sculati.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the presentation. I'm curious to, I'll be very curious, I guess, in the future, evaluating the changing the location from Sausalito to Larkspur, because I can see how people can benefit by taking the ferry to Larkspur, but there is so much traffic on 101. So I'm curious to see how many people actually drive to take the bus, the shuttle from Larkspur versus taking the ferry. So I wonder if there is a way to analyze that.
The best way is to look, is to do passenger surveys and to ask the question about how they access the survey, which we do have on the schedule for this year specifically. Not only are we hoping that more people will be using the ferry, but also using the smart train to get to Larkspur, and smart has significantly increased not only weekday, but weekend service. So we will be looking at that. One of the major challenges we had with the Sausalito location is the lack of parking and the cost of parking. So we receive feedback from riders that, you know, if they had an 11 o'clock shuttle trip, by the time they found parking and then by the time they paid quite a bit of money to park in that spot all day, their experience started off kind of on the wrong foot. And Larkspur, you know, has adequate parking. That is one reason we're only doing Friday, Saturday, Sunday is because we know there's surplus parking on those 3 days. And the Bridge District has partnered with us to open up that parking for the service. So, it's definitely a little bit longer of a trip if you're coming from San Francisco. If you're coming from the East Bay and from the North Bay, it's actually a shorter trip. So.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. And my other question is, I guess I will imagine most of the people taking the shuttles, they are actually tourists. And if that is the case, I'm curious to see how the National Park Service allows for parking at Muir Woods versus taking the shuttle. And then based on all that, I feel that $3.75 going to $4 ticket is not very high. So I wonder if there is an opportunity to increase that to reduce our cost, because I think I understood that NPS is taking all the revenue. So it's just basically to cover our cost.
Yeah, great question. And really, this program has gone through a number of iterations over the years. So the big change when NPS went to a reservation system, and just to be clear, you don't need a reservation to go into the woods. You need a reservation to park or to take the shuttle. So it's really the access piece that has the pre-reservation. They control the supply of that parking and how it's distributed, and in the same way, the shuttle reservations. They control the pricing on both ends, and that's one reason we renegotiated, because with them controlling the fares and them controlling the supply, we really didn't have a lot of control over that, so we went and basically capped our financial commitment to say, we want to support this program, it's important to us. But if we don't have control over, you know, the supply, then it makes it challenging for us to operate. So, did I answer your question there?
Sorry. Yes. Okay. Yes. And my last one is, and I think you and I had a conversation like 8 years ago, about the possibility of Muirwood residents, Muir Beach residents to have like a stop in there. So I don't know if that's a desire from the community or if that's a possibility where they could maybe provide additional funding.
Yeah, we've explored that in the past. There's been a couple challenges that we've been unable to overcome. One is a bus stop that is accessible and convenient, you know, working with both Caltrans and the county to identify where that service would operate. The other challenge we have is, you know, these shuttles are typically pretty full going in and coming out, and the service in terms of when it operates didn't really align with when we were hearing the residents needed public transit service. So we're now at a point of a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And again, the service is set up to be directional, to go into the woods in the morning and to come out of the woods in the afternoon. It's definitely something we can continue to explore, but I would say under the current model, there's still some challenges there.
Director Casissa.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the presentation. I'm just wondering, how do you advertise the shuttle, that service? Because I know we're tying in with Larkspur Smart and the ferry, but I know a lot of times driving down 101, there's the signs, probably Caltrans puts them out saying reservations only. How do you get those people that are driving down 101 figuring, I can't go to Muir Woods, but they could go to Larkspur Landing to park and potentially take the shuttle?
Yeah, great question. So, I mean, the best marketing, honestly, is when you go to reserve your parking and it's full, the other option is the shuttle. So I would say the majority of our passengers, that's how they find the shuttle. It's their only option to get to the woods on the day and the time that they want to go to the woods. We have done coordinated marketing, and you've probably seen some of it come out. Marin Transit Smart, Golden Gate, we're all pushing, train, bus, and ferry to get to the woods. And going back to the previous question, it is true that a lot of the visitors to the woods are tourists, but a lot of those tourists come from the Bay Area. I mean, it's not, you know, tourists that are flying in and staying in hotels in San Francisco. A lot of the tourism that we see comes from, you know, the adjacent Bay Area counties and Sacramento and those areas. And a lot of ways, Smart and Ferry become a really feasible way to get to the woods, and especially with this connection now in Larkspur.
Do you have a partner with NPS where it says, you know?
I forgot the new system. Do we ever partner with NPS where if I go on their website and it says, you know, the parking lot's full reservation, that would redirect them to either our website or something would pop up saying you can take the shuttle and redirect?
So we actually don't have any information on Muirwood Shuttle on our website. Everything is through the NPS websites, the gomuirwoods.gov.org.com. I forget the URL, but it is one site that you go to both reserve that parking and the shuttle.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Director Moulton Peters.
I just wanted to offer that, you know, the shuttle was set up, you know, my predecessor Annette Rose and then Charles McGlashan all worked on this as a demand management tool to get traffic off Shoreline Highway. And so it was part of a package to reduce auto trips that came in with the parking reservation program. We restricted parking on Frank Valley Road, the street, because it was dangerous. We put up those electronic signs on 101 directing people where to drive. And as Robert said, we've trued it up many times. I do think that the question about the local demand, and I think surveys are great, and if we ever get out there and do any studies with NREX at some point to see what people actually do and track them with the license plate survey, that could be interesting because that corridor, Shoreline Highway, is still so congested. So anyway, it was intentional. It's done a good job, and there's always room for improvement.
Director Rodoni.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation and the follow-up on Director Moulton Peters's the comments and questions. Is NPS tracking the changes to the shuttle and any potential impacts? Because I think we all have a lot of history, and they have a lot of history as to why this shuttle is important. But I just hope that as changes take place, that we reduce the number of days, the number of hours and opportunities, that they're continuing to monitoring the impact so that we, in the future, if we have to make another decision, we have more information available to us. And likewise, it seems like to me the budget has kind of remained pretty constant, but we've always been reduced the service. And, you know, what is the impact of all that to them and to the residents and to the roadways and the parking? I'm not aware of any issues, but someone should be tracking that so we make sure we have good data when we have to make those hard decisions potentially in the future.
Yeah. I will say NPS does a great job tracking visitation. And then when we pair that up with the shuttle ridership, that's where we get some of the mode split data. We looked heavily at that data when we decided to go to this Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The weekday ridership last year just wasn't on par with even the off-peak weekends. But Friday looked very much like a Saturday, Sunday, whereas Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday was quite a bit lower. So, you know, in the spirit of really using those resources to target where the service is needed, when it's needed, I think we do rely heavily on that data.
Is there any transfer from Ferry or SMART? Guessing the answer is no, because it's the NPS program.
Yeah. Okay. Two separate fare systems. Yeah.
Okay. All right. If there are no other questions, we'll open it up for public comment. I'm not seeing anyone in the chambers.
No hands online.
Okay. This is a report, so we will accept the report. Thank you, Mary.
Move that we accept the report.
I'll second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. The report is accepted. We'll move on to agenda item 7, the award of a contract for the 1075 Francisco Boulevard East surcharge grading construction.
And our facility development project manager, Paul Haefeli, will be giving this presentation.
Okay. Good morning. Oh, you can definitely hear me. Like Robert said, I'm Paul Haefeli, Facility Development Project Manager with Ren Transit. I see you again, Director, President Sackett, and Board of Directors. As mentioned, I'm presenting on item 7, which is to ask to authorize GM to execute a contract award for the listed project, 1075 Francisco Boulevard East surcharge. For the agenda, I'll be going over the project history, then an overview of the project, going over contractor procurement, and then the fiscal and staffing impact. So going over project history, in November 2024, the mentioned project site was purchased at 1075 Francisco Boulevard East. The need for surcharge work was identified in June of 2025. This was during the environmental phase in which we onboarded a geotechnical engineering consultant. They did an investigation, and during that process, they identified the need. I'm going to try and use my laser pointer. This is the existing surcharge that's on site, which was brought on site by the previous owner, which was a hotel developer, which comes into play, and I'll go into that in more detail. The surcharge design work was completed for our project needs in November of 2025. And then the follow-on environmental approvals, first CEQA approval, which was given to us by your board in January of this year, and then NEPA approval through the FTA was obtained more recently in April of 2026, which allows us to proceed with this work. For project overview, just generally to go over, I think we mentioned it here before, but what surcharge is that drives this need. Surcharging is essentially putting a preload onto existing soil on site, which is done by bringing in other soil in order to put a load on the existing soil to allow it to consolidate over time due to the conditions of the existing soil being kind of soft bay mud soil that doesn't consolidate and settle easily on its own, such that when our expected construction loading, primarily of our future building, is allowed to start and not settle after it's constructed. So this preloads that so that when we go to construct it, it's in proper condition to do that. There are other methods such as putting in deep foundations, but they're more costly. So this is intended to be a preliminary measure that's more economical. So that's the general need for it. You can see on this screen on the right side is our our concept design that was done during the environmental phase. The gray outline, gray shaded area, is that existing surcharge soil that was shown on the previous slide. And then the bolded outline is our proposed future building location. So as you can see, we would need to move the existing soil. We're also going to import some additional soil to fully meet our surcharge needs and get it to a new location and then allow that consolidation process to happen. As shown on here, this will be conducted in two phases with a 4-month settlement period between those phases. Just briefly, that's for two reasons. One is so that we can accommodate the expected structural characteristics of the soil. If you do it all at once, that could compromise the integrity. And then also to stabilize the soil grading itself. It's done for that process. And doing all this, including the additional soil, helps produce the consolidation that we want to incur and measure that. And then also assists in bringing the site up closer to the 100-year floodplain elevation that we need to comply with for the overall project. We will be conducting geotechnical monitoring throughout the construction. We'll start it during the construction. It will continue after surcharge construction completion until there's an adequate condition to build the operation and maintenance facility. We will be including the required environmental mitigation monitoring and reporting program methods that are required, such as tribal cultural resource monitoring. That will only be implemented on the existing surcharge soil per the tribal agreement, as well as vibration and noise controls, air and dust controls that are shown in the MMRP. Additionally, required erosion control, stormwater, and groundwater discharge permit compliance will be implemented and maintained. That'll be through the State Water Resource Board requirements for stormwater, as well as Central Marin Sanitation Agency for groundwater discharge. Due to our wet drain installation, we'll need to do that. Contractor procurement. On the right-hand side of the screen, you'll see a table showing our bids, who they came from, and the amounts. We received responsive and responsible bids throughout all of the contractors, which is great. We had a lot of interest. And our most competitive bid was from Magyar and Gelati, for $1.13 million. As you can see, just briefly on the timeline, bids were released on December 8th of last year, and our bid opening was on January 21st. The winning bid was quite a bit higher than the engineer's estimate. The cost drivers mainly were a consistent competitive price line items, so although they were higher than the engineer's estimate on key areas, they were consistent across the bid, showing that that was adequate. And then market pressures mainly consistent cost escalation factors. And then fiscal and staffing impact. As mentioned, the surcharge grading contract award is $1.13 million. And the total budget for surcharge is close to $1.6 million, mainly for our support services that we'll need to conduct for MMRP services, testing and inspections, those types of items. So as shown in the table, the funding breakdown, FTA section 5339 through our grant, It's close to 950,000. And then the rest is through local funds, capital reserve for just over 630,000. This project is included in the capital budget under 1075 Francisco facility. And the budget amendment 2026-07 is updated to reflect the surcharge expenditure of $400,000 in the current year budget. This concludes my presentation. Happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Questions? Director Lauren Sculati.
Yes, thank you so much for the presentation. You mentioned that the space is going to be for sea level rise. I hear you saying for the 100-year flood elevation for the property. Is that going to be for the building or for the entire property? Because I think we discussed about having the space as a possible emergency location for sea level rise.
Yes. So the surcharge work is primarily for the surcharge purposes. It'll assist in getting to that 100-year floodplain, so it'll raise the site partially. The follow-on final design and the final work for the overall facility will address that more completely. Okay. If that makes sense.
Okay, yes, it does. Thank you. And I know we talk about this, that there is a consideration to make the street like a two-way street instead of like one way. So I'm just thinking if that's going to impact anything that we are doing right now, so we don't have to fix anything later, I guess.
So yeah, we've been coordinating with the city of San Rafael and TAM on exploring the two-way conversion to East Francisco. At this time, we don't see any major significant impacts with our current proposed design in that two-way configuration. It actually offers some additional circulation flexibility, but something we'll definitely be monitoring as we move forward into design.
Okay, that's great. And just a comment that I'm really happy that we are using a local contractor. So that's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Other directors?
Thank you.
Questions, Director Rodoni?
Yeah, could you tell me a little bit about what our outreach plan is for this first phase to make sure the community knows what's happening and when? I assume it'll be a lot of trucks and a lot of other things. So just wondering what the outreach would be to the community.
The outreach is, I'm sure there's awareness around this, has been outgoing. There's a capacity building exercise overall, and then that includes the facility. Once the design gets started, we will do more outreach then as well. For the surcharge itself, that's more localized just to the site, so there won't be quite as much targeted towards that itself. When it comes to trucks, we'll look at that a little bit more. We do expect some amount of truck traffic, but that'll be monitored and contained within our environmental requirements in the MMRP.
Teeing off of Director Lauren Sculati's question regarding the sea level rise or getting out of the 100-year floodplain, are you anticipating that there will be an elevation differential between the street and this ultimate project?
Yes. Yes, there will be a difference. It has to come up from there. The street level is, I forget the actual number, but it's not at zero. I think it's at like a certain elevation of five mm-hmm. or six, and we have to bring it up to like somewhere like 11, I think. But anyway, there will be a differential there, and that'll be to the building elevation primarily. We'll have to go through the full design process to see where all of the elevations shake out, depending on where that lands.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? We'll open it up for public comment there. Then I'm not seeing anyone in the chambers.
No hands on Zoom.
We will close public comment and I will ask for any final deliberations and or a motion.
I just have a comment around Director Rodoni's. I think the impact for those trucks could be very significant, especially with the expansion of the new lane as you exit 101 North on Bellam. So I'm just I guess, hoping that there is a lot of a lot of traffic right now on that intersection. So just to maybe keep an eye on that and see when it would make sense to have those big trucks going around in that area.
Yes, thank you. We'll definitely take a look at that.
I'll move staff's recommendation, authorize general manager to execute the contract.
I'll second it.
We have a motion by Radoni, a second by Kasisek. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That contract is approved to execute. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.